Chapter 8. Birth. Our firstborn came into the world slowly and with great difficulty. Mark and I named him Matthew after my favorite 1980s actor, Matt Dillon. After 27 hours of labor and more than one epidural, I was given a glimpse of him as the nurses rushed him off to the neonatal intensive care unit for testing and observation. The memories are fuzzy because I had an adverse reaction to the epidural, which made my blood pressure plummet. Before I lost time, I recalled everybody panicking. The next thing I remember is being told that the anesthesiologist was shooting something into my IV to counteract the reaction. Matt was born with a low Apgar score and a bluish tint. Naturally, the doctors were concerned. His tiny head was pointed and black and blue from what was described as birth trauma. Soon after being whisked away, the seizures started. He would need a spinal tap and a specialist from Dayton Children's Medical Center to see if there was any brain damage. I was terrified that he was going to die. I had never experienced such extreme love and fear as I did during those few days after Matt's birth. I did not realize it at the time, but I had just given birth to my first genetic mirror. I would feel slighted whenever my mother-in-law would say out loud that Matt looked exactly like Mark did as a baby. He already had a female version of himself, Kimberly. It was my turn. Matt was housed in the incubator closest to the nurse's station, indicating that his case was the most serious in the NICU. I would shuffle down to the NICU every chance I could to visit. I was allowed to hold him and feed him for short periods of time. I remember the nurse in charge encouraging me. She told me one day that she knew I loved Matt because of how often I visited him. She compared Matt to another baby in the NICU whose mother did not come even one time. I felt deeply sad for that baby in a knowing kind of way. I was released from the hospital before Matt, who was sleeping soundly in the NICU because of the phenobarbital he was receiving for the seizures. I remember the emptiness I felt when we pulled into the driveway of the yellow house without our baby. The next day, we went back to the hospital for training on the apnea monitor that Matt would be attached to in case he stopped breathing. There were quite a few occasions of being woken out of a dead sleep to the monitor's alarm blaring. It was always because Matt had moved in his sleep and not because he had stopped breathing. We could all finally breathe again once the specialist determined that, although Matt suffered contusions, he did not have brain damage. The entire birthing experience had been traumatic, and I was not sure I wanted a repeat performance. My mom arrived from the East Coast once I was home with Matt to spend the week with her first grandchild. I was thrilled to have the help and that we were all home together as a family. I was a typical overprotective new mother. Grateful that I had been laid off during my 8th month of pregnancy from the law firm, I spent those first joyful months with our beautiful new baby with the head full of dark hair. He was an easy baby and could sleep through anything. I could not breastfeed him as he was deemed nipple confused after receiving bottles in the NICU. I contacted La Leche League for help, but Matt would scream bloody murder until he got a bottle. Ultimately, I ended up using a breast pump for the first several months of his life. After becoming Matt's mom, I knew there was nothing else in the world that was more important. I had no desire to go back to work full-time because that meant somebody else would enjoy all the firsts of our new baby. But we needed a second income, so I decided to go back to law part-time, eventually leaving to work in a restaurant where I could control my schedule. I knew the preschool years would go quickly, and I did not want to miss them. I read all the parenting books. Still, I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. When I saw that red, wrinkly kid lying helpless and naked on the changing table, I knew that not one of us had any control over our circumstances as we enter this world as helpless little beings. We are truly at the mercy of those around us. If I had any say in the matter, I certainly would not have been born during a time when society was deeply conflicted about a woman's right to be sexual, a time when women were shamed when they got into trouble, trouble meaning pregnant and not married. The cultural norms dictated at the time of my birth that white middle-class and upper-middle-class women were expected to live up to a standard that no reasonable horny teenager or young woman could maintain, celibacy until marriage. It seems unheard of today, but it was not so long ago that social mores were vastly different. Even in the middle of the supposed sexual revolution, men were given a pass to play the field and women were expected to stay virgins. It is hard to imagine, but there was very little sex education at that time, and some women became pregnant during their first sexual experience. Abortion was available to women of means, but it was risky and illegal. My birth mom got into trouble, and trouble meant a serious consequence. The consequence being that you would be forced by your family, pressured by those you loved and trusted, to give your baby to somebody else, to married strangers. One thing was for sure. If you did not give up this out-of-wedlock baby, you would never find any decent man to marry you. There was going to be nobody to help you raise this baby, your flesh and blood, the grandchild of the parents who were urging you to dump the kid. You were not welcome home. And further, you were not permitted to tell anyone about your condition, because what would the neighbors think? They would think that you were loose. Word would get out, and then your reputation would be permanently tarnished. Once you arrived at the maternity home, if you had not already been shamed enough by your family, you would be reminded not to share your last name with any of the other mothers-to-be. We never spoke of the fathers of our babies, one former Hollywood movie star would confide to my husband through Facebook. Mark had reached out to her after learning that she stayed in the same maternity home as my birth mom. The woman, who surrendered her son to adoption to continue her film career, shared that she had recently reunited with him. She stated to Mark that her son was having a hard time believing who his father was. We had to assume that he too was famous. Some women in trouble, like my birth mother, lived and worked in a wage home. Can you imagine it? You are pregnant with a baby you are not allowed to keep while you care for other people's children, feeding them, doing their laundry, and trying not to think about how in just a few short months you will no longer be there and you will no longer be carrying your child. In fact, you will never see your child again. You know, she was plenty old enough. She could have taken you and gone to California and raised you there, Rachel said to me one day. Mom, she didn't have a career. She didn't have any family support. She didn't know anyone in California. Rachel was not convinced that my birth mom was just a regular young woman who possibly fell in love, had sex, and got pregnant. Even in 2021, my birth mom was still being judged as someone who broke the rules of society and deserved to be punished.